Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 129, Improvising in the Kitchen. Hey everybody, welcome to the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast. It's all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun, making good food, being inspired, all of that stuff that you and I, as people who like to home cook, just can't get enough of. So welcome to the show. This is for you. This is your community. Glad you're here. Today I'm going to be talking about a topic that has been on my mind quite a bit recently. I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to tackle it exactly till I get into this discussion, but we're going to be talking about improvising in the kitchen. And one of the reasons, well, there's two reasons, I guess, I'm talking about this today. One is I do a fair bit of it myself, so I want to share my thoughts and opinions about it. But I think it's important because I've been seeing a lot of this kind of feedback coming in from folks that are joining the Facebook group for the show, the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break. Kind of doing an informal tally of the people that tell me these things when they join. I would say almost half the folks, if not more than half, say they want to get better at improvising in the kitchen or cooking freestyle or just being able to make dishes and recipes based on ingredients they have on hand. Some sort of a form of that, you know, improvising in the kitchen is what people want to get better at. So today I'm going to be addressing a little bit of that. But before we get into that, a couple of bits of housekeeping. If you're interested in joining that Facebook group I mentioned, the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break, please, by all means, hop on over and sign up and we'll let you in and you can start having conversations and sharing recipes and things like that. And you can get there most easily by going to kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. It'll redirect you to the Facebook group where you can request to join. We're pretty low key in there. You know, we're not trying to sell you anything or get anything out of you. It's just a place for people to get together and ask questions and share victories in the kitchen and that sort of a thing. Also, if you're interested in the show notes for this particular episode, anything I mentioned that you might want to check out, I'll link to, you can do that over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/129. And finally, if you're interested in getting hold of me directly, you can send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Or of course, you can head over to Facebook or Twitter. The links for all that stuff is on the webpage and it'll be in the show notes. So feel free to reach out. Always happy to hear from you and interact with the folks that are listening to the show. I also want to do a quick shout out to relatively new listener, James Edgar, who is in the Facebook group and said he just finished listening to all the episodes, all 128 of the Kitchen Counter Podcast episodes. Bless you, James. I haven't even done that. Gone back and listened probably to practically any of them. But it was kind of fun because he crunched some numbers. So apparently through the 128 episodes, I've almost cracked 49 hours of recorded time. And so that averages out to about 23 minutes each. So he did some more number crunching. If you want to see any more of that, you'll have to go into the group. But I thought that was kind of fun. I run this show and I haven't even thought of going back and doing any of the math. So James, thanks for that. That was a lot of fun. And thanks for listening and being an active member of the group. Okay, one other thing I have to get off my chest before I get into the main topic here. And this is a tiny little soapbox that I occasionally get on. I know I've talked about this before in other episodes, but I don't remember when I talked about it last, but I feel it's time I just bring it up again. And that is, please, if you are a regular home cook or you're planning on getting in the kitchen more, maybe you're deep into a New Year's resolution where you're doing a lot more home cooking and making healthier foods at home for yourself, whatever it is, before you go out and get any fancy appliances or nifty gadgets or that new Instant Pot or sous vide cooker or heck, even a new shiny new cast iron skillet, please, please make sure your knives are up to snuff. I only bring this up and I won't name any names, but I was over at somebody's house and I needed to use a knife to cut something. And it was like torture. I mean, the knife I was given, I was trying to cut a lime in half. Okay. I couldn't cut through the lime with this knife. It was like, I really had to struggle. I had to like puncture the lime and like work the knife into it and kind of saw just to cut a lime in half. I was like kind of dangerous. I was really working it over. I was afraid the knife was like going to pop out and, you know, hit me. But my point is, if you're spending time in the kitchen, your knife really, really is, I'm not exaggerating here, you're really, it's your number one tool. And it's one thing you really need to have a decent quality, at least one decent quality knife. You don't need to have thousands of dollars in boutique knives in your butcher block, you know, knife holder. You just need at least one, maybe two really decent quality knives that are going to last a long time. Because no matter what you're cooking, no matter what you're preparing in your kitchen, chances are you're going to be using a knife in some step of the preparation. You're not always going to use your sous vide cooker. You're not always going to use your cast iron skillet, but you're probably always 99.9% of the time going to use a knife to prepare something. So make sure you have a good quality knife that you feel comfortable using, that can keep an edge and is safe to use. You know, sharper knives are much safer than dull knives in the kitchen. So please, make sure you've got a good knife. Now, you don't have to spend a lot of money on knives. I don't recommend going out and dropping $1,000 on a crazy Japanese, you know, custom Santuco knife or whatever. For my money, I think some of the best knives that are a combination of price and quality come from they're ubiquitous. They're in all the main department stores. I think you can get them on Amazon fairly easily too. And practically anything from Wusthof and Henkel's are pretty good knives, and their knives are going to last you for a while. And their knives you're going to enjoy using. It's going to make your prep a lot easier and a lot safer. I'll put some links in the show notes to a couple of ideas, maybe on Amazon, but you know, go to your local kitchen supply store and see what they've got in the way of a decent knife. And so when I say decent knife, I'm saying like for a cook's knife or a chef's knife, like a 6 to 8 inch. I mean, you certainly should be able to get a really good one for under $100. That sounds like a lot of money, but again, you're using it a lot. You're using it more than anything else in your kitchen, and it's unsafe to use a knife that's no good. Okay, so that's all I'm going to say. Make sure your knives are up to snuff. Maybe start a savings jar. Oh, you know, by the way, good quality knives, if they're taken care of, last a long time. So keep your eyes out at things like estate sales, garage sales, even some thrift shops can occasionally get good knives in. So just keep your eyes peeled if you're on a budget and you don't want to spend a lot of money on a knife. It's far better to get a secondhand knife that's of really good quality than a cruddy cheap knife that's just going to make life hell in the kitchen. Okay. All right. So links to a couple of ideas in the show notes. I'm not going to say any more about it because I've already ranted on long enough. And I really want to get to the main point of this episode, which is improvising in the kitchen. All right, let's do it. Okay, what are we talking about when we talk about improvising in the kitchen? This is a really big topic, and there's not really one narrow definition that I am going to apply to this. I want you to think of it in a spectrum, okay? So when we talk about improvising in the kitchen, here's what I kind of see on one end versus the other. So on, let's just say not improvising in the kitchen is just following a recipe A to Z, no deviation. You cook it exactly as it's stated and you end up with whatever that recipe produces as your final dish. So that would be not improvising. Now on the low end of improvising would be just taking that initial example and tweaking it just a little bit to say, I'm going to follow this recipe practically as it's written almost all the way, but I might add some ingredients. I might tweak a few ingredients. I might tweak the way it's cooked just a little bit, nothing drastic to where the entire recipe produces a different dish, but I can put just a little bit of a tweak on it, to suit my taste or my style. You know, people who have food allergies are already improvising because when they make a recipe, oftentimes they're already having to tweak and make substitutions and bend recipes to suit their needs. So that's on the low end of the improvising scale. Now on the other end of the improvising scale, this is like real Master Chef, Iron Chef kind of stuff where, you know, you can drop a handful of ingredients in front of somebody and they can turn it into practically anything they want and do it with finesse and it'll taste amazing. Without any planning or setup, they can just run and do it. So that, I would say, is on the opposite end of the spectrum. Okay, so simple would be minor tweaks to recipes. Complex would be to complete magic out of practically thin air with a handful of recipes. So for home cooks, I think most of us fall somewhere, I would say, if one is very simple and 10 is very complicated, you know, most of us who home cook on a regular basis, we're probably in the 3, maybe 4 range. Some of us are lower, some of us are higher. It's not a good or a bad thing. It's just the way life is. And that's probably in that range is sort of where I'm going to focus my comments today. But before even that, I think just illustrating this idea of a range, I think brings up the point that you, if you're interested in becoming a better improviser, you kind of need to decide what your goals are and why you want to do it. Is it because you have a restrictive diet because of food allergies or things like that, and you just need to know how to take recipes and change them all the time to suit your needs? Or do you just love to cook and entertain and you want to be able to impress your friends and family with your ability to whip anything up at any given time? Or do you just get tired of cooking from recipes, or maybe you want to develop your own recipes and you want to understand how ingredients work together, to where, you know, you can just start from scratch, so to speak, and build something great. So those are all sort of different goals that you may have as a home cook. There's many more than even those few examples. But I think if you understand what you're trying to do and where you want to go, that's going to help get you there, of course, right? If you don't know where you're going, it's going to be hard to get there. Now, here is the bad news, I think, when it comes to improvising in the kitchen for home cooks. You know, when I talk about that, the 10 end of the spectrum, right? Just being a Master Chef, Iron Chef, Chopped Champion, whatever you want to call it, where you could take anything and make anything out of it at a moment's notice. That is extremely difficult, and it's an extremely rare skill for people to have. But I think what's interesting, and I would love to go deeper into this and research more, but I think this idea of a home cook being a great improviser is a relatively new phenomenon, because I bet if you go back a couple of generations, home cooks were not nearly the improvisers they are today, or just naturally or even aspirationally, because I think there were fewer variety of ingredients available to most home cooks, at least in the United States. There wasn't a culture of, you know, the quote unquote food porn culture where you're constantly being bombarded with images and videos and audio and TV shows and magazine articles and blog posts about all this massive variety of food and things you can make in the kitchen. I mean, you know, there's 1,000 varieties of any particular recipe. And don't take my word for it. Just Google any couple of ingredients on the internet and you're going to come up with, you know, dozens and dozens of pages of hits of just recipes that are variations on whatever it is you're looking for. So there's this culture today that kind of builds into our brains that it's a good thing to be a kitchen improviser. And that's kind of what you need to do to be a good cook. I don't necessarily think that's true, but I've talked about kind of that food media environment before and how it contributes to, I think, where home cooks are today. I just think this is kind of more of that. So don't get discouraged if you cook a lot at home and you don't consider yourself a good improviser. That's not always the goal. Okay. That's not always the end point for a home cook. And truth be told, many of us will cook our entire lives in our home kitchens and probably never get past the 3 or 4, you know, point on that spectrum of being good improvisers. I'm not trying to paint a dismal picture. I'm just trying to maybe level set us to reality and kind of setting our expectations. So I think understanding that and then deciding where you as a home cook want to be sort of on that spectrum, what's your goal, is certainly an important first step. But here's the interesting thing about improvising in your kitchen. And this is very counterintuitive, I think. But improvising in the kitchen actually takes a heck of a lot of planning to pull off well. And that seems very counterintuitive because I think a lot of people, especially when they're just getting into cooking, again, they watch these shows and they think, oh, I can just cook things on the fly and they could turn out great as long as I know what I'm doing. Well, yes, as long as you know what you're doing. But there's a lot of planning that's required to make things work. But planning is only, I would say, one of the three legs of the stool for what it really takes to be a good kitchen improviser. And the other two take a lot of time, and this is not something you're going to be able to pick up overnight. So planning, being a good planner in the kitchen, is one. But the other two things go hand in hand, and that is practice and experience. So you have to have a lot of experience in the kitchen. You have to have a lot of experience working with ingredients and different recipes and different cooking techniques. And not only do you have to have experience, you can't just try everything once and say, I'm experienced in all of these things. Of course, like anything you try to master, you need to practice. You need to repeat. You need to try it in different ways over and over and fail and succeed and see what works and what doesn't work. Until you kind of build up this almost intuitive, I understand how these ingredients will react when I cook them a certain way and when I put them together. I don't mean an encyclopedic understanding of how that works, but you at least have to be moving past the rudimentary phase to understand how techniques and ingredients work together before you can become a really capable improviser in the kitchen. So if we take it to the most logical beginning, right? If you've never set foot in a kitchen before, if you've never cooked anything on your own, you've never even, you know, heated water in a microwave, and I handed you a dozen eggs and I said, hey, improvise me up some scrambled eggs, you couldn't do it, right? You, chances are, even if you've watched it done on TV, chances are you're going to fail at your first attempt at scrambled eggs. You might get close. You might make something that's like marginally like scrambled eggs, but I would bet they're not going to be great. They're not going to be perfect the first time out. They might not even be perfect the second or third time out, right? So it's practice and experience that gets you farther when it comes to being a good improviser. I hope that makes sense, right? You're not going to make scrambled eggs right and well, let alone pulling off an improvised souffle, right? That's not going to happen. I read this book, and I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here, but I promise I'll bring this around again. I read this book years ago. I don't have it anymore. I'll have to find it on Amazon and put a link to it. It has nothing to do with cooking directly, by the way, but it's called Abracadabra, and there's a subtitle, and it's about how magicians use different techniques to deceive you. That's like how they do their magic, right? And I read it because I was just kind of interested in that sort of thing at the time. But one thing that has stuck with me, and I won't quote it exactly, like I said, I don't think I have the book anymore, but the general flavor of what has stuck with me from that book, and I just found it fascinating, it very obvious, but I'd never thought of it in these terms before. The author basically said, you know, when you go to a magic show and there's a professional magician on stage or whatever doing their tricks and you're in the audience, you're both working under completely different assumptions of reality. So you, as an audience member, when you're sitting there and the magician goes up on stage and says, pick a card, any card, from a deck they seemingly just pulled out of their pocket, you're conditioned to think like, oh, a magic trick is starting right now, and I'm going to maybe participate in the trick, or I'll certainly watch the trick, but whatever's happening is happening now, and this magician is going to do something magical with this card trick. That's what you think in the audience. What the magician already knows is that he or she has already set up this trick, right? The trick may have started 2 days before you even walked into the auditorium to watch this magic show. The magician has planned out the trick. They know exactly how it's going to go. They've stacked the deck, right? They've stacked the deck literally, probably in their favor. So what looks like an improvised magic trick to you in the audience is actually a well planned out, well thought out. Basically, think of it like a recipe that this magician just pulled off, but it appears to be magic. And I just thought that was a fascinating way to think about how what can appear to be effortless really takes a lot of planning and a lot of anticipation on the person that's doing whatever it is they're doing that makes it look effortless. So, Roger, what in the heck are you talking about? How does this even apply to what you're trying to say today? Well, this is what I'll say. You as a home cook, as I just mentioned, you need to have practice and experience. But even so, you know, how do you stack the deck, to borrow that term, in your favor when you're improvising in the kitchen? So given the idea that I can't magically grant you practice and experience, and I can't make you a good planner, what are some things that you can do as a home cook right now, today, to increase the odds that when you go to improvise in the kitchen next time, you're going to have a better experience and a better outcome and maybe fewer failures, more success? So I have a few ideas on this, and this is not an exhaustive list, but I have four things, I think, that I would tell you if you want to up your improvising chops. Okay, the first thing I will say is that you absolutely need to think in simpler terms when it comes to cooking in your kitchen, especially when it comes to improvising, right? The more complicated a dish you're trying to get out of it, out of whatever ingredients you have, the more complex the planning process is going to be, the more complex the cooking process is going to be, the more chance there is going to be for a failure. Now, this applies to whether you're following a recipe, too. The more complicated a recipe you're trying to follow, the more likely it is you're not going to have a perfect result. But when it comes to improvising and you're controlling the different bits and pieces of how you're putting this dish together, the opportunity to screw up is multiplied a lot. So think in simpler terms. What are the fewest things you can do to the ingredients on hand to come out with something delicious? Right? So if you have some chicken and a whole crisper drawer full of vegetables, a stir fry, for example, is far more simple than trying to pull off a coq au vin or a chicken pot pie, right? So number one is simplify what you want to do, and your chances of success improvising are going to go a lot more smoothly. And that goes hand in hand with planning, right? I mentioned at the very beginning of this particular segment that you can't just jump in the kitchen. It's very rare to be able to jump in the kitchen and just start dicing up ingredients and cooking, and at the end of the process, you end up with something coherent and delicious. You've got to plan what you're going to do, right? Because just the art of cooking, the process of cooking, when you start, you can't unring that bell, right? Once you start cooking, you're kind of committed. So there's very few ways you can alter course in the middle of cooking. So you need to understand, based on what ingredients you have, before you turn the first burner on, before you cut up the first ingredient or whatever, kind of where you want your end point to be. And the simpler it is, the easier it will be for you to pull off. So that's tip number one, is simplify, simplify, simplify. Tip number two, and I've mentioned this on another episode of which I can't remember, but you know, when you're learning to cook and you're trying to build your experience and your knowledge, you can cook 100 different dishes. You can cook a different dish every day if you want that are vastly different from one another, but you're not going to really get good at any particular dish. So I prefer going deep, picking a few dishes that really inspire you, that you're passionate about, that you love to eat, that your family likes to eat, whatever, and getting really good at those dishes, getting deep into those dishes, really understand how to make them. Because once you get to master a particular recipe and a particular type of dish, it's going to be a lot easier for you to improvise within that umbrella of whatever that recipe is, right? So I mentioned in my last episode where I did the live cook-through of risotto that once you know how to cook that dish, and I've cooked it hundreds of times, I'm pretty comfortable improvising and putting different ingredients in and pairing it with other things, because it's almost like autopilot to cook risotto for me. So I don't feel like I'm going to screw that up. And I have a decent understanding of other ingredients that might be incorporated into my risotto and how those might turn out. So I feel totally comfortable improvising with risotto. Had I only made risotto once or never, of course I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that, right? Because I didn't have a knowledge and a mastery of the dish to do that. So pick the dishes you love, go deep, and that can be a foothold, if you will, for improvising. Sure, you're going to improvise those recipes that you have mastered, but eventually you're going to start branching out, and that's just going to sort of little tendrils of cooking knowledge are going to go out in the world, and as you branch out, you're going to start making new dishes, and you're just going to become more and more comfortable trying new dishes and doing, you know, cooking by variable, improvising by variable, right? Just changing a few things in a dish you've mastered and seeing how that turns out, and then changing a few more things until you're basically creating new dishes from the starting point of your mastered recipes, if that makes sense. So go deep. That's, in my opinion, maybe the best way to most rapidly increase your cooking knowledge and comfort. It sounds counterintuitive. You know, how am I going to increase mastery by making slight variations of the same dishes 20 times? But trust me, it works, and it will help you become more comfortable not only with that dish, but improvising. So that's step number two, or tip number two, rather, go deep. Now, I want to take it back for tip number three to that example of the magician stacking the deck. This is the best way you, as a kitchen improviser, can stack the deck, and that is making sure you have a well-stocked pantry with versatile ingredients, right? So whatever ingredients you have, you know, tossed at you, or you've got left over in the fridge, or your friend brings over from their CSA basket, whatever, you should have staples in your pantry that you're comfortable with using that you can use as sort of a blank canvas for those occasional ingredients you're trying to improvise with, right? So things like rice and potatoes and onions and beans and stocks and pastas and, you know, maybe canned tomatoes. Of course, depending on what sort of cuisine you gravitate to, those ingredients will change. But if you always have a supply of stock on hand, for example, you know, you're a third of the way to making a great soup already with whatever ingredients you happen to have on hand, for one example. So making sure you have a pantry that you can go to build the foundation of your improvised recipe is crucial, right? It's very unlikely that you can just stick your hand into the fridge and pull out four things and make a complete meal just from those four things, right? I mean, you typically need those foundational ingredients to kind of stack the deck in your favor, to go back to that term. Just this morning, we woke up, we weren't feeling 100%, you know, it's kind of the winter blahs. So I thought, well, I've got stock in the freezer. I know I've got some carrots and some celery in the fridge, in the crisper drawer. I know I've got some egg noodles, and I've got some ground turkey. So I, you know, not a complicated recipe, but I basically just improvised up a turkey noodle soup with those ingredients. And I, of course, I couldn't have done that if I didn't have those ingredients in my pantry. Of course, the ground turkey was something we just got like the night before. But the rest of it was just stuff we kind of already had around. So, you know, that's a common application of improvising in the kitchen, right? That's an example of what we're trying to do. But again, I couldn't have done it had I not had a pantry with this sort of ingredients. And I certainly didn't want to go out in the icy weather to the store to buy those ingredients. I wouldn't have made it had they not been on hand, right? So make sure your pantry is well stocked. You know, I'll put some more ideas in the show notes of things you can have in your pantry. But again, it's your personal dietary preferences, your personal preference of the types of cuisine you like to cook is going to affect that, of course. Okay, my last tip for now for being a good kitchen improviser, and this is all about the planning portion of improvising in the kitchen, that is have good resources at hand. You know, it takes some people a lifetime to master their craft of cooking and, you know, understanding what ingredients work well together, what ingredients don't, what ingredients do when they're prepared in a certain way. So it's, you know, it's not typical that home cooks have that vast reservoir of knowledge just at the tips of their brain. So you should have good resources on hand. There are several books that I think are great books to have on hand. I love the Flavor Bible. I've talked about that before. I love the Deluxe Food Lover's Guide. I've talked about that before. Cookbooks like Bittman's How to Cook Anything, Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat is a great newer book that's out that I think provides a good foundation. And of course, there are a lot of good websites out there too. Even fundamental websites like the USDA's website on food safety is always a great website to kind of have in the back of your mind if you're curious on how long you need to cook certain proteins, for example, before they're food safe. A lot of cookbooks and other websites will have that information, but just think of the websites and the books, things like that, that you can have at hand. So when you walk into your kitchen and you think, I'm going to improvise something today, you have some backup and you have some knowledge at your hand that you can dip into to help you plan how you're going to deal with those ingredients that you've got sitting in front of you when you go to improvise. I'll put links to a lot of those again in the show notes, but being a good improviser means having good resources at hand. So those are four ideas in addition to having a lot of practice and experience in the kitchen and, of course, being good at planning. So those are four ideas I think if you kind of approach in the context of becoming a better improviser, I think they're going to give you some quicker wins, right? I mean, taking, you know, practicing a lot and spending years gaining experience, I mean, there's not a lot of ways you can supercharge that and get it done quicker, right? That just takes time and effort. But if the four tips of just looking to simplify what you're cooking, mastering a handful of dishes before really branching out and improvising others, stocking your pantry with the versatile foundational ingredients that will let you cook anything you want, and having good resources at your fingertips. Those four things are going to give you a little bit of a boost, I think, quicker to get you on the road to becoming a better improviser sooner. All right, folks, so those were just a few of my thoughts about improvising in the kitchen. I hope they made sense. I have about four pages of just handwritten notes that I've sort of been jotting down over the last couple of weeks about this topic, trying to figure out the best way to approach it. Again, it's sort of one of those topics where it just kind of takes a long time and a lot of work to get good at. So hopefully I gave you a couple of ideas to trim off a few corners here and there. Now, if you want the show notes, again, head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/129, and you'll find like the books and the sorts of things that I mentioned, and I'll put some links to the knife thing that I mentioned at the very beginning of the show. Please make sure you've got a decent knife in the kitchen. If you have any direct questions, feel free to shoot me an email, again, over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com, or again, head over to the Facebook group and engage with us there, kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. All right, folks, that is going to do it for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Now, I'll probably have a smorgasbord episode out relatively soon, probably in the next week, so keep your eyes peeled for that. If you're interested in leaving a rating or a review for the show, I know a few of you have done that on Apple Podcasts recently. I don't know who you are, but you know who you are. So thank you so much for that. I really, really appreciate it. And of course, tell your family and your friends about the show if you think they'll get some value out of it. All right, everybody. Thank you so much once again for listening to the show. I'm Roger, your host with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. And until next time, happy cooking.